So I'd like to talk to you this evening with the help of the Lord about the building. The building here is getting to the point that it's looking completed. We still have some things to finish around here to make it completely done, but it's getting to the point that we realize that it's going to get there. Sometimes projects can look kind of hopeless and endless, but I feel like we're getting to the place that it looks like we can see an end in sight. Been having a building expansion there at work, and got into some things to try to make things ready for the building that we weren't anticipating. Got into a very, very large rock. I don't know how big it was, but they spent over, I think they said 22 hours hammering on it with that big track hoe and pneumatic jackhammer out there. So we heard that bang, 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 bang for about 3 days. So they broke a lot of rock up. They pushed a lot of rock out of the way, and when the last banging that they did sounded just as solid as when they started. So I've got to believe that that rock was I don't know, big as a house probably. I don't know how big it was. Anyway. I think if we'd tried to dig it up, it would be in might have been a disappointing task. But anyway, it's important for us to build on something that's stable. It's important for us to build on something that is not insecure and that would crumble. I remember years ago noticing an older building in the town that I grew up in. It was an old grocery store that I'd noticed this as a young boy, that the bricks looked like that there wasn't much holding them together. There was gaps between them. And then they hired somebody coming in called, done what they called tuck pointing. They went in and I don't know if they chiseled, ground, sandblasted. Anyway, they cleaned out a lot of that mortar and went in and remortared all of those joints in the side of the building. It was a tedious job, but it was important to keep that building from collapsing. So I'd like to talk about a building this evening. I think you know what we're going to talk about, but let's go to Revelations, the 21st chapter. And we'll begin reading in the 10th verse. John here writing about the his revelation or his vision of what was out there in the future and to him and to the future of the church. And he says here, and he carried me away in the spirit to a great and high mountain, and shewed me that great city, the holy Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from God. I believe this is spiritual Jerusalem. I believe this is what we would call the church today. All right. So he says, having the glory of God, and her light was like unto a stone most precious, even like a jasper stone, clear as crystal. And many feel like that this jasper stone would be what we might call today a diamond. And had a wall great and high, and had 12 gates, and at the gates 12 angels, and the names written thereon, which are the names of the 12 tribes of the children of Israel. On the east, 3 gates, and on the north, 3 gates, and on the south, 3 gates, and on the west, 3 gates. So, we could maybe elaborate to great extent about these 12 gates, but I noticed that it had the name of the 12 tribes of the children of Israel. And the church is built on and built with the value system and the valuable components that God was trying to get across to His people in the Old Testament time. All right? So one of the major components in this holy Jerusalem is the Ten Commandments, if you will. The law that God gave His people that taught them what wholesomeness was and how humanity ought to behave in the sight of God. You notice when the apostles went to the churches in Asia Minor and the seven churches that John talks about in the beginning of the book of Revelations, especially to Corinth, and Paul went there and ministered to them, and there were some people that I believe genuinely got saved, but they didn't have the foundation material that the Jewish people did. They didn't know the things that were proper for a husband and a proper for a wife, and they didn't know what was proper and how to respect God, the one that created us all. There was a lot of confusion because they had been away from God and any knowledge of Him for many, many generations, where the children of Israel had the old law. So he goes on to say after the 12 gates, and he says, and the wall of the city had 12 foundations, and in them the names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. And I'm not real sure why what he means by 12 foundations. I don't know if he meant 12 layers of foundations. We think it's pretty substantial if we have one foundation. But he had 12 foundations. So for the sake of maybe clarity, I want us to realize that he intends for the foundation of the church to be very stable and very secure. He says, and on them were the names of the 12 apostles, the ones that he depended on to carry on the gospel message when he departed this old world. And he that talked with me had a golden reed to measure the city and the gates thereof and the wall thereof. And the city lieth four square, and the length is as large as a breadth. And he measured the city with the reed, 12,000 furlongs. The length and the breadth and the height of it are equal. And he measured the wall thereof 144 cubits, according to the measure of a man, that is, of the angel. And the building of the wall, as it was of jasper, and the city was pure gold, likened to clear glass. And the foundations of the wall were garnished with all manner of precious stones. The first foundation was jasper, the second sapphire, the third a chalcedony, the fourth an emerald, the fifth a sardonyx, the sixth a sardis, the seventh a crystallite, the eighth beryl, the ninth a topaz, the tenth a chrysophras, and the 11th jacinth, and the 12th an amethyst. So every one of these precious stones, you know how valuable the lives of the apostles were? You know how valuable it is for those that will be steadfast and true to the end today? That's why I feel like it's talking about these things being, he says the walls were like clear, like of diamonds, and the city was pure gold, likened to clear glass. I don't know what this looked like in a vision, but that's the best words he knew. It was magnificent. This city is worth something. It's worth something. And it's not something, you know, a drive-by over here in the neighborhood, not so far from Brother Stephen's house, is this old limestone, I guess it is, marble church building. And I can only imagine how expensive it was when it was built. I'm guessing that it's 100 years old plus. I don't know. But it's a pretty attractive old building. It's not made out of diamonds, and it's not made out of emeralds or any of this amethyst. They don't have any of that in there that I know of, maybe on the inside. But anyway, but it's just a real, it's an eye catcher for me. And it has some value today, but you know, it cost a lot to build that, and it's cost men something to give us the foundation. It cost the apostles something. Every one of them suffered the death of a martyr except for John. And they tried to martyr him. The story is that they tried to boil him in oil and it didn't seem to affect him. All of those, these cost something. It's extremely valuable. He says the 12 gates were 12 pearls. Every several gate was of one pearl, and the street of the city was pure gold, and as it were, transparent glass. And I saw no temple therein, for the Lord God Almighty and the Lamb are the temple of it. And the city had no need of the sun, neither of the moon, to shine in it, for the glory of God did lighten it, and the Lamb is the light thereof. And the nations of them that are saved shall walk in the light of it, and the kings of earth do bring their glory and honor into it. And the gates of it shall not be shut at all by day, for there shall be no night there, and they shall bring the glory and the honor of the nations into it. And there shall in no wise enter into it anything that defileth, neither whatsoever worketh abomination or maketh a lie, but they which are written in the Lamb's book of life. The church is a magnificent thing, and I hope that we can catch a glimpse of it. It is all-inclusive of all mankind. But it is also very exclusive. We're not going to be able to inhabit that city through eternity unless our name is in the Lamb's Book of Life. So the church of God is very inclusive. But it is also exclusive. All right? So if we have truly been saved and regenerated, we're part of the church of God. But if we are unwilling to live in a manner that our name can be written in the Lamb's Book of Life, then he says, there shall in no wise enter into it anything that defileth, neither whatsoever worketh abomination or maketh a lie, but they which are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. So I want us to get a picture to start out with of how magnificent the church is. You know, we have our own mind as what it would take to be magnificent. Doing a little research in the last few days and looking for pictures of for ideas about a pulpit. And just was scrolling through there and I seen this thing caught my eye. This pulpit that's in a cathedral, I guess that's what you would call it, Roman Catholic cathedral, and it's gold. I'm assuming that it's not solid gold, that it's just gold overlaid. But it's very ornate. And the pulpit, you probably wouldn't even call it a pulpit when you've seen it. It looks like kind of a lookout balcony that might be on a ship or something. It's up on the side of the wall, probably 15 or 20 feet up off the wall, and there's this carved staircase that goes up with a banister that has all kinds of carving It's very intricate. All of this is gold plated, and the little lookout nest up there that they call the pulpit, it's this little bitty cubby hole that a man can stand in, and it's kind of over the crowd. It'd be like somebody, if we had something up on the wall here, and the wall was even much taller, and you'd have this staircase going up, and the minister would be speaking out over the congregation. And the little cubby hole up there is all carved and gold plated, and then it has a little roof over the top of it that's all gold, and then I got to look, and this looks familiar. I've seen this before, and with my own eyes. And I recognized down below it was in Passau, Germany. My wife and I were there on our anniversary a couple of years ago. And at the time I thought, I was taken aback. This is quite elaborate. And I've seen several elaborate features about that place. Huge pipe organ and this thing they called an altar and gold. And, you know, all of those things won't hold, doesn't really hold a candle to the church of God. But this is a spiritual building, all right? It's not a literal building. It's not something made in the 16th century or the 17th century or the 18th century. It was something that was established when Jesus paid for it. The apostles paid for it. The Apostle John here says the foundation has the names of the apostles of Christ on it. The walls have the names of the 12 tribes. These are valuable components that it was built with. Now, we're talking about those that's eligible to come in. Let's go to Revelations, the 3rd chapter. And notice what he said to the church at Philadelphia, 3:9, he said, "Behold, I will make them of the synagogue." I want 3:12. "Him that overcometh will I make a pillar in the temple of my God, and he shall go no more out, and I will write upon him the name of my God and the name of the city of my God, which is New Jerusalem." Now that's what he said the church was over there in the 21st chapter, right? He says here, "which is New Jerusalem, which cometh down out of heaven from my God, and I will write upon him my new name." Redeemed is what he's going to write on us. Forgiven. Adopted. A child of the King. And he says, "him that overcometh will I make a pillar." So you and I today, there was pillars in some of those cathedrals we've seen. Some of them may have held something up, and others were just decorative pillars. But you and I today will become a pillar in this spiritual church. It says, "him that overcometh," him that is redeemed, he that has rose above the degradation of sinful life. He says, "I'm going to make you a pillar in this temple, in this New Jerusalem." I hope you get a picture of this building. It's more than a wood frame building with sheetrock on the inside and siding on the outside. This is something that is very substantial. It's built to last through eternity. You know, if this building is here in 100 years, we think, well, it's lasted pretty good. But 100 years is just getting started with the church. All right? So let's go to 1 Timothy, the 3rd chapter now, in the 15th verse. And notice what the Apostle Paul says. 1 Timothy, chapter 3. In verse 15, he says, "But if I tarry long, that thou mayest know how thou oughtest to behave thyself in the house of God, which is the church of the living God, the pillar and the ground of truth. In Revelation, he said, to him that overcometh, I'll make a pillar. And he says here, the Apostle Paul says, if I am not there to be with you, he says, I'm writing to you so you'll know how to behave. You'll know how to conduct yourself. The Apostle Paul was very concerned about not only Timothy, but all of those that heard the gospel message, that they would know how to maintain. We need to know how to maintain our homes, don't we? You know, we need to keep the water out and the temperature as comfortable as possible inside. And when things get loose or worn, we need to repair them or replace them or something. And he says here, I want you to know how to behave and maintain. Why? Because Paul seen the value of the New Jerusalem, of the church. And he says here, if I'm tarry and I'm not able to be there, I want you to know how to behave in the house of God, which is the church of the living God, the pillar and the ground of truth. He said there in Revelation, to him that overcometh, I'll make you a pillar. Here he says the pillar is part of this structure. It's not only the pillar, but it's the ground, the support of the truth. So we need to be in a place to support truth. All right? As individuals. But as individuals, we make up a spiritual city and a spiritual church. So let's go on to 1 Corinthians, the 3rd chapter, and notice what he says here. In verse 9, I believe it is, he says, "For we are laborers together with God. Ye are God's husbandry. Ye are God's building." Husbandry means someone that is seeing after the maintenance of, especially an agriculture endeavor. If you're one of the things that husbandry can include is taking care of a vineyard, maybe an orchard, and maybe a vegetable garden or something like that. He says, you're God's husbandry. God is concerned about your welfare. Paul says, I want you to know how to behave in the house of God. And he says here, ye are God's husbandry. You're laborers together with the Lord. Ye are God's husbandry. Ye are God's building. So this building that is so magnificent, that's so valuable, that's so durable, that it should last all through eternity. It will last through eternity. It's our objective to make sure we're part of it. Not just a visitor there, but that we're part of it. We can be a visitor at a lot of places, and a visitor is, they can go through and smile and nod and oh, that was beautiful, and I like that, and it was pretty, it was amazing, it smelled nice, or whatever observation you might make. But if this is part of, if you're part of it, then you're concerned about all the little intricate details. You're workers together with the Lord. You're God's husbandry. You're the one that He's working through. And He says that ye are God's building. We are the church with the help of the Lord as individuals. Lord, help us to realize the value of a life of integrity with the Lord. In Ephesians, the 2nd chapter, we'll notice here, Apostle Paul speaking again, 2nd chapter, 20th verse, he says, maybe we'll start in the 19th verse, "Now therefore ye are no more strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saint of the household of God." You're no more out there somewheres. If you've come to know the Lord, you're a fellow citizen. You know, when you move to a different community, it takes a while to feel like you fit in. And I've told this before, but for the sake of the point here, I'll tell it again. Years ago, when I moved from the Boot Hill of Missouri to Vinita, Oklahoma, I felt like an outcast. I didn't know anybody except the people I went to church with, and I didn't know all of them very well. And when I was around Anita's mother and her family, they would talk about people in the congregation like I know them, and I didn't know them. The only walls I knew were the folks that lived down around Guthrie. I didn't know walls that lived in Vinita area. But I learned, but when I moved there, I felt very unfamiliar. I was used to going in to small town grocery store and parts stores and stopping at the gas station and everybody knowing me and me knowing them. And if I forgot my money, I could go back home and get it and it was no problem. That wasn't the way it was when I moved to Vinita. And then we moved over here. And my wife experienced what I had experienced. She was used to going to Walmart and knowing the greeter at the door and most of the cashiers at the register. She was used to going into the grocery store and them knowing her before we were married and them talking to our children when they were babies in the grocery cart. And she went to the store and it was just go in and find your stuff and come home. And I remember we had been here a while, I don't remember how long, and she had told me, I'm just going in to get a few things. And she was gone, and gone, and gone, and gone. And when she came back, she said, oh, I met so-and-so that we knew from school, and they got to talking to me and telling me this, and I don't remember what all it was. And then before I could get out of the store, I met somebody I knew that she was feeling like it was home. All right. So it says here, we're built upon the foundations of the apostles and the prophets, Jesus Christ himself being the cornerstone, in whom all the building fitly framed together groweth into a holy temple in the Lord. We're no longer an outcast. We're no longer, as is talked about in verse 19, a stranger and a foreigner. This is who we are. This is us. I'm a child of the King. I've been adopted. Christ, I'm a joint heir with Jesus Christ. Can you imagine? My mental mind, my natural mind doesn't take that in very good. But the scripture tells me I'm a joint heir with Jesus Christ. He says we're no longer a stranger and a foreigner, but we're a fellow citizen with the saints. With John and the Apostle Paul. We're a fellow citizen with them. We can have the same spirit that Peter had. We can have the same blessing and witness and fellowship that the apostles had and Polycarp had and those down through the ages that's really got a hold of the Lord and put their life on the line. We can be a fellow citizen with them. They are our brothers and sisters. He says, ye are built upon the foundation of the apostles. Isn't that what John said in the book of Revelations? We're built upon the apostles and the prophets. That's the Old Testament. Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone. He's bigger and more stable and stronger than any limestone behemoth that we might get into around here. I mean, I really think that's pretty solid up there. But this is better than that. This is not moving. This is not going anywhere. We can build our life on this. You know, people have built their lives on on some losing propositions before. They built their lives on things as bad as sinking sand. I used to drive by a place on my first job after high school. I drove by a place on the river. It was the St. Francis River that I would cross. It was the boundary between Missouri and Arkansas. You got on the bridge and you was in one state, and when you got off, you was in the other. And it was kind of a swampy area, and there was people that lived year-round on these houses that looked like poles drove in the ground. And when the water was kind of low, there might be 4 or 5 feet between the water and their house. They didn't have no yard to mow. It was just the river. And there was a little walkway, like a sidewalk, made out of wood. And it would have, like, piers drove in the ground. Just looked like old light poles or something. But there'd be this little house out there. I'm going to tell you, if you went out on the porch and you dropped your bubble gum, it was just too bad. It was gone. If you was playing with your little Hot Wheel car, it was gone. I guess you could have went fishing off the front porch, but I wouldn't want to live there. You know, I've seen water up there like lapping on the front door of those places. I don't want a house there. I'd a lot rather have a house on the rock. And this here says, not only are you not strangers and foreigners anymore, but your fellow citizens with the saints, not just the folks here, but the saints all down through the ages. Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone, in whom all the building fitly framed together groweth into a holy temple in the Lord. Here's the thing that I've found about trying to do trim carpentry. I'm not an expert, but I've found that it takes patience. And if the board is a little bit too long, it just don't fit right. If it's a little bit too long or too short, it don't fit right either. But when it's the correct length and you've mitered that corner and fit it, I'm going to tell you, it looks nice. You put that together and tap it into place and put a nail in it, and it's wow, you can't even see any of the other part of the board. It's a beautiful thing. That's how we should be. As individual components, Jesus wants us to be fitly framed together to make a magnificent spiritual structure. Better than any cathedral you'll ever visit is more intricacies. You think about those things that were built in different Renaissance periods and all of those things and all of the carvings and the paintings and the dangerous things that happened to try to build those structures. And we went into one place in Austria. Vienna, Austria. Another cathedral we went into. And, you know, they kind of messed it up because they had this scaffolding in there with an elevator where you could go all the way to the top, 200 feet, I think, 80 meters, 60 meters, I don't remember, about 200 feet up to the ceiling. We think 12 feet's pretty high, but that was 200 feet plus up there to the ceiling. And we could go up there and see all of the painting that had been painted by hand on this dome of the ceiling. Well, scaffolding is not real stable, you know. And 200 feet in the air on scaffolding, and I'm walking around on plywood, and I told my wife, I said, you know, I've seen all I want to see. I want to go back down. Because when I'm walking around and I can feel this thing kind of shake under me, you know, I'm thinking about how quick I could go 200 feet down to the bottom. But all of the things that were in there, this thing was beautiful inside. This spiritual building is better than that. It's more beautiful. It's one of the things that should be so attractive to the world around us. Lord, help us to know how to be fitted with our brothers and sisters to the point that those looking on would say, that's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. I hope we get a picture of just how beautiful it is. In the 9th chapter of Hebrews, we want to turn over there a minute. And we'll read maybe the 11th verse. He says, but Christ, being come and high priest of good things, to come, a high priest of good things to come by a greater and more perfect tabernacle, not made with hands, that is to say, not of this building. So, not of this structure, no matter how nice we feel like this building is for us. Some people might think it's pretty beneath them. But I'm very thankful for what the Lord has blessed us with. Very thankful. But he says Christ is being come and high priest of good things to come by a greater and more perfect tabernacle, not made with hands. That is to say, not of this building. And it's not this building. It's not any building, naturally speaking. It's a spiritual building that is magnificent. I don't know how to say it. Well, we get a hold of it. But I want us to have a picture always in our mind of the church being a magnificent spiritual structure. And every one of us is just as valuable as any of the others. And what we contribute when we allow the Lord to put us together in a fitly joined environment or setting, it's even better. Every one of us have something to add and to contribute. In 2 Corinthians, in closing, we'll go to 2 Corinthians, the 5th chapter, and I want to notice the first verse. He says, for we know that if our earthly house of this tabernacle were dissolved, we have a building of God, and house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. You know, if something happens to this building that we're having service in tonight, we can rest assured that there's a spiritual house that didn't get destroyed. If a tornado comes through and destroys all of our work and all of our expense and all of those kind of things, the Church of God is still just as secure, it's still just as beautiful as it ever was. And if this old carcass, this old tabernacle that our soul is dwelling in, if something happens to it, if we know if our earthly house of this tabernacle were dissolved, if it comes to the place that we realize we're at the end of life's journey, we got a hope. We have a building over there. We've got a place in God's presence. We have a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. And we can be part of that. You know, there's going to be the tree of life over there. That's where it went. You know, people have looked all down through the ages for the fountain of youth and tree of life and all that. Well, when God drove man out of the garden, he took it with him. And it's over there. And when we get to heaven, we'll be able to partake of it freely. And we're going to live through eternity with him. Oh, I hope you have a picture in your mind this evening of how beautiful New Jerusalem is. And how splendid it is. And how powerful it should be. And it is. Lord, help me to be fitted in the place where his beauty can be displayed. What's the song that says, talks about displaying his beauty? I can't remember the words of that right now. talks about his beauty, portray. Yes. You're painting a picture of Christ with your life. Well, Lord, help us. You pray for me. I want to be part of that spiritual church. Desire your prayers.